If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
South Carolina's got everything. Natural beauty, trendy cities, but you might miss your next big adventure in a smaller town. We've got you covered on the Palmetto Porch, Discover South Carolina's official podcast. I'm Devin Whitmire. Come with me as I venture off the beaten path and learn about these towns from the locals who know them best. Check out the Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information, head on over to scpalmettoporch.com.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring author, psychologist, and daily contributor, Siobhan Scott.
The Take Care of Maya trial, a case that is very easy to get emotionally involved in, because on the surface, it looks horrible. If you watch the documentary on Netflix, you'll certainly know why. You can walk away from that with a very one-sided opinion on what is presented there, but there is always two sides to a story, and I think it's important that we take a look at that. And I want to say, going into this, there was things that were wrong on all sides of this case.
Totally. It is not 100% agree with here, you. Yeah, there's so many there. Missteps.
Siobhan Scott is with a psychotherapist and author to talk about this case. And Siobhan, this is one that it's a rabbit hole. Over the weekend, I know, since we last talked about it, you took a deep dive into this case, watching a lot of testimony and really looking at the behind-the-scenes workings of all of this. There's a lot that you found, but let's kind of begin with the disorder that they were looking at in the mother, the Munchausen's by proxy or factitious disorder, as it's called, and why they would have gone down that road, because on the documentary, it makes it look like it was just kind of a split decision. I don't know if that's quite the case. What did you find as you dug into all of this?
Yeah, factitious disorder imposed on another, which we used to call Munchausen by proxy, is a horrifying thing. And they see it a lot in pediatric settings. So it was not crazy that the doctors went there with at least speculating this could be going on. 90% of the time, it is a mother who is inducing this symptom pattern in the child. And very often, the majority of the time, the mother has some sort of medical background, maybe a nurse, maybe a nursing assistant. And in this case, Beata, Maya's mother, was a nurse, had a medical background. The parent usually presents as completely devoted to the child and very loving. So this is not a situation where you see something that looks like child abuse, but it's considered medically induced child abuse. Usually the parent comes in and is aggressively demanding treatment and often demanding unusual or strange treatments. They've usually doctor shopped. You'll see a long history of bouncing from doctor to doctor and hospitalizations. And all these things happened in this case. Mm-hmm. The CRPS, chronic regional pain syndrome, is very rare, and it's usually associated with an injury to a limb. Someone has had an amputation or a severe break in an arm or a leg. That was not happening here. So it was a very strange presentation with a very upset. Understandably, she was upset, but she came across as aggressive and confrontational and hostile. And she was demanding huge doses of ketamine that the doctors told her very clearly, this could kill her. Mm-hmm. We're not sure what's going on. I think another factor here is the doctor that had diagnosed the CRPS was not board certified. He was not an internist or pediatrician. He's an anesthesiologist, and he specializes in CRPS. He did not have hospital affiliations anywhere. And so it is my guess that he was looked at as best a maverick. He sort of wasn't following the mainstream, which may or may not be a good thing, but I think it raised suspicion. And the doctors were not doing a very good job. Well, they were doing a terrible job of communicating with each other. She had seen over 30 physicians. She'd had other hospitalizations. And at least in one of the other hospitalizations, one of the physicians treating her had said, we need to look at Munchausen by proxy here. So I think the hospital, Johns Hopkins Children's Hospital, I think they were suspicious. I think it made sense that they were suspicious. And if they're suspicious about anything that could be happening in the child abuse realm, they are legally mandated to make a report to child welfare. And so they did. And so I don't think they were wrong there. Mm-hmm. But after that, it went completely sideways.
Yes, and that's where a lot of things, you know, you said, went completely sideways. Initially, somebody walks into a hospital and makes these sort of demands, they would have been remiss had they not said, whoa, wait a second here. This doesn't look quite right. It doesn't feel right. We have to follow some sort of protocol, which initially it appears that is what they did. But then, yes, everything goes off the rails shortly after that. Obviously, Maya was getting that sort of treatment. She was at that level of, it was ketamine, I believe, right? The ketamine coma.
Yes.
And so she had built up a tolerance. They were finding that it was working for her. But how rare of a treatment is that? Number one, the disorder is fairly rare. But then to have a treatment like this and a mother come in and say, this is the only way to treat her, that would be, I guess, similar if there was another case where a mother came in and said that this child needs a crazy amount of opiates or something.
Exactly.
The hospital wouldn't just start handing it out because mom said, please open the dispensary of this.
Yeah, it's a rather horrifying treatment because, as I understand it, evidence has been presented that there was a 50-50 chance that she would not be normal and she might die. As a parent, that would horrify me. This treatment is not even done in the United States, which is why they sent her to Mexico for it. There was a doctor in Mexico who was willing to do this. So again, that's not something you're going to get in the United States because of the risks associated with it. And I tried to put myself in her mother's shoes throughout watching this. Mothers do get very upset when they see their kids struggling. They may want to think out of the box. And in this case, they were also trying hyperbaric treatments and just a lot of things that were unusual. And I think, again, the ketamine, the going to Mexico, they had spent tremendous amounts of their own money on looking for solutions that would not have been validated by American physicians, typically. So it just looked weird, which I can understand.
Sick of the ads?
We opt to.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.